An hour after the aggression, Saad Hariri spoke and supported the Saudi aggression and condemned the Yemeni groups and spoke about the intervention in Lebanon as well. Many people took stances, and this is a natural right. Those who agree, who object, are with, against, there's no problem. Also, we have our right to express our stance and our view, our different view, and just as we respect the right of others to express their stances and their views in the language they find, which they find appropriate, which provocate us, it's also our right, and nobody should take this right away from us, the right to express our stance in the language which we find appropriate. But I hope that this new disagreement or this new political division regarding this development in the Gulf, I hope that it doesn't intensify the situation in Lebanon or have repercussions regarding the government. Of course, the government must take into consideration all different orientations, all different Lebanese orientations in this issue, and nobody should drag this country into more tension. I have 2 points to refer to. The first, regarding the situation in Lebanon, very quickly, the dialogue and the special tribunal and what is said in this tribunal. From the beginning, we chose dialogue for the sake of the national interest, the interest of our country, Hezbollah and Al-Mustaqbal, to sit down and talk. It's in the interests of that all sides in Lebanon sit down, all the political groups, all the political movements. The ceiling was to try and decrease the sectarian tension and preventing the collapse of the country. And regarding the issues where we can hold dialogue and reach an understanding, let this happen. From the beginning, there were some political groups, some political factions in Lebanon, outside the Mustaqbal movement and inside the Future movement or Al-Mustaqbal, there were some who were against, who very much objected to this dialogue and tried to sabotage it from the beginning to prevent the launching of this dialogue, and they are still doing so, taking advantage of every opportunity to achieve this goal, including what is being stated, the testimonies being given in the special tribunal. Regarding us, we don't pay any attention to these stances and these voices. We shall continue with this dialogue as long as it is a national interest and it is not a need for one specific faction. And we will put up with all of these provocations. We can put up with this. And hence I call, especially the supporters of the resistance, I call for patience, putting up with this and not paying attention to these voices, because the aim of these voices is to once again create sectarian incitement and to reignite sedition, because those people have no place except when there is sedition and sharp divisions, internal conflicts. So we don't want to fulfill their wishes. What is required is just to put up with it and to ignore all of these provocations which are taking place. Regarding the special tribunal and what was said and what is being said on its podium, everyone in Lebanon and the world knows that we, years ago, we spoke clearly and we issued a clear, decisive, final stance regarding the very origin of the court and its goals and its performance and the laws and the results of this tribunal. That's a closed case for us, and therefore we're not concerned with what is taking place in this tribunal, although the Lebanese all watched the long testimonies and listened to a lot of stories, and they didn't even notice up until now anything which has any legal value which was said. I am not concerned in commenting on this issue. However, I'd just like to remind you that we don't comment on everything which is said in the tribunal, because the tribunal from the beginning in its details, from the beginning to the end. Our stance is decisive and clear towards this tribunal, and when the whole thing is rejected by us, then we don't need to make any comment. And so nobody should say that witness X said this, Hezbollah didn't comment, or the other witness said that, Hezbollah didn't comment. We are not concerned with everything said in this tribunal. That's it. The second point before I address the situation in Yemen is that over the past few weeks we witnessed a new campaign, or a renewed campaign, regarding accusations about sabotaging or preventing presidential elections. There's no doubt that presidential vacuum is a problem for Lebanon. But some people like to lay responsibility on others. What concerns me is what was said over the past few days, the accusations made to Iran and hence to Hezbollah. However, the accusation was made to Iran that Iran is obstructing the presidential elections in Lebanon. Let me say clearly that Iran does not intervene in Lebanon's presidential elections. It did not intervene and it will not intervene. The French called the Iranians and insisted, and the Iranians referred them to the Lebanese and said that this is a Lebanese internal issue, and Iran does not put a veto on any Lebanese politician who wants to become president. It doesn't name anyone, it doesn't reject anyone, and it didn't discuss with us any specific name, and therefore Iran is not responsible for the obstruction. He who is responsible is he who the Lebanese know very well in the media and in the corridors, in the political corridors. There is a certain country, I will name it soon, there is a certain country which puts a veto on the strongest and natural and most logical candidate who can achieve balance and stability in Lebanon, and he represents the Christians, the majority of Christians, but this country puts a veto and prevents such an election. This country is the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and specifically the Foreign Minister Saud al-Faisal. This is something which all people know. Personally, my conclusion is that the leadership of the Future Movement, at some point, it might not object. The head of the Future Movement, at some point in the discussions here or there, or in his own convictions, according to his own convictions, he might not object to this option. But the problem with us here in Lebanon is that there is a country which put a veto on the president. Okay, you know that this side which is obstructing the presidential elections in Lebanon is Saudi Arabia. Why do you hold Iran responsible, which has nothing to do with this issue in any way whatsoever? In the presidential elections in Lebanon, we decide and we elect and we make the choice. Nobody dictates to us, whether it be our friends or others. First of all, go and let your decision be in your own hands without listening to a veto from here or a veto from there. And then the presidential elections in Lebanon could reach the natural logical conclusion. So those are the two points I will address regarding the internal situation in Lebanon. Now I will address the bigger developing situation. When we heard on the news at midnight that the Saudi war began against Yemen, and the air raids were launched, and there was widespread bombing, and after that it was said that there were 10 countries, etc., and a coalition had been formed, and it was called the Decisive Storm Operation. Let me first of all say a few words before addressing the political issues. It didn't occur to me now, but from that time until now, as I followed the news and the comments, I heard many say that the following. Of course, what occurred to me is what exactly happened so that this storm would take place, would be carried out by the Saudi regime and its allies, and such a campaign takes place with Arab will. What exactly happened What is the reason behind such acts? We in Palestine and the people of the region who live around Palestine and who since 1948 until today are putting up with the pains of the Israeli existence in Palestine, never did we see such a storm. We even dreamt of such a breeze coming, such an Arab breeze, but unfortunately nothing happened, no such storm operation happened. Therefore, what has happened, or what happened, is that the Palestinians for decades have been calling out, and they still are in Lebanon. No, in 1982, yes, the Lebanese called out for you, but after that the Lebanese gave up. In 2006, I said, we don't want anything from you, just leave us alone. But the Palestinian people are still calling out for your help, are calling for you, are calling for your help. In the last war, the 51-day war against Gaza, the homes of thousands of the inhabitants of Gaza were bombarded, their women and children were slaughtered, and they are Sunni Muslims, and they were calling out, they were crying out, and they were calling for the Arab kings and the Arab emirs and the Arab leaders. You didn't make any move, you didn't take any steps. I'm going to refer to Palestine later. So where did this come from, this motivation, this courage, this decisiveness? This is something which deserves surprise and deserves us to just watch, take notice. Of course, something big, something dangerous, which is more important than what our region witnessed throughout decades. Everything which happened in our region, the wars, the injustice, etc., etc., did not call for Saudi military intervention or such a Saudi military operation. But now something happened which called for such action. Let's see what it is. Now, if the goal... Also, from the Palestinian angle, I'll continue then, I'll go back to the excuses. If the goal is to save the Yemeni people, then why did you leave the Palestinian people for decades without doing anything? You conspired against them, you ripped them apart, you betrayed them, you sold them out to the Israelis and to the Americans. Second, if the goal is to return the legitimate power, according to your allegations, to Abd Rabbo Mansour and his government, then why don't you do you pursue efforts to retain what is more important than power, which is Palestinian territories, the sanctities of the Ummah, the main Muslim sites in Palestine? Number three, you say that the new situation in Yemen threatens your security and the security of the Gulf and the security of Saudi Arabia, although it's new and it's not clear what are the capabilities of this new situation. It hasn't been completely formed yet. And you say that you felt danger and hence you took the initiative and went ahead with this aggression. Didn't you sense the danger of Israel's existence? Israel, which has one of the strongest armies in the world, which is close to your waters, close to your countries. This means you Arabs, you Muslims, this is a new Arab testimony or confession that Israel, it's not just not an enemy now, it never was an enemy. Never was Israel an enemy in the eyes of those Arabs. Never was it a threat which requires such a storm and such action. Anyway, let's now discuss the excuses or justifications. It's my responsibility to explain this in order to conclude with a stance and to make a call. Let's take a look at the justifications which were made. Do they allow these justifications? Do they allow them to launch a war, a very brutal, destructive war? Now homes are being destroyed, civilians killed, women, children. Is there a reason? Is there a justification? And the same goes also for the other groups, the ulamas, the religious clerics who want to give legitimacy to this war. What are the justifications which have been made until now, the justifications for the aggression against Yemen and against the Yemeni people. There are three justifications, first and foremost. I will leave the largest justification to the end because it requires some comment. The first is that there is a legitimate president who is elected according to their opinion, although he resigned and then he withdrew his resignation, although his term ended according to the Gulf Initiative. But let's forget this. Let's assume that there's no problem, that he hasn't resigned, nor has his term expired, nothing. That there's a legitimate president. Let's assume this. And he requested from them to assist him to return him to the presidency and to return his government so the government can rule the country. This is the justification. Is this enough to launch a war on Yemen? Okay. Previously, you didn't take such action. For example, when the Tunisian people rose against Zain al-Abidin bin Ali, and he fled to Saudi Arabia, and he is still under the protection of Saudi Arabia. And at that time, the king of Saudi Arabia was angry, and he had stances. Saudi Arabia had very harsh stances against the revolution of the people of Tunisia, and he tried to return Zain al-Abidin bin Ali, but he failed against the will of the Tunisians. But you didn't form a coalition, an Arab coalition, an international coalition, and say, let's go and launch a war against the Tunisian people in order to return the legitimate president and the legitimate government. Another example, the last example, in Egypt, we all know that the stance of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia towards the revolution of the Egyptian people, which toppled Hosni Mubarak, was a very negative stance, a hostile stance, and it was a public stance, and it was said that there was an argument between the Saudis and the Americans because they considered the Americans were taking the situation too lightly or collaborating. And all hell broke loose for the sake of Hosni Mubarak. Egypt is a neighbor to you, it's very important to you, but you did not put together a coalition and say, let's go, let's launch an aggression and against Egypt and strike those who are rising against the legitimate president, according to your conviction, the legitimate president Hosni Mubarak. You didn't do this. Why in Yemen? That means this justification is not true. This is a false justification, an excuse, a lie, one of the lies in order to wage a war. The second justification, and second, that's not the way. In the whole world, usually if you want to return a legitimate president or legitimate government, you begin by imposing sanctions, then you exert political pressure, financial pressure, economic pressure, you put together lists, you call for people to participate in dialogue, you take advantage of all of the good relations, the animosities in the world, and then the last resort is this option. What is the secret behind this quick, very quick, sudden step of such military action at such a scale? So it's not about a president and a government whom they want to return to Yemen. It's a lot more deeper. The second justification is that the new situation in Yemen, meaning this new situation, in order not to mention a lot of names, I'll say the new situation in Yemen. What I mean is this popular revolution, which is led by the Ansar Allah movement and also with the cooperation with the Yemeni army and many of the components and the tribes of the Yemeni people from all different sects. This is a new situation. The new situation in Yemen threatens Saudi Arabia's security and the security of the Gulf countries and the security of the Red Sea. Okay, is this true? Do you have evidence which you can give to the Muslims and to the Muslim people and to the clerics and to the muftis who are giving you decrees? Do you have evidence, clear-cut evidence? Because you are waging a war. War means spilling blood. Sometimes you want to hold people accountable because of the intentions that you assume, and that is completely inhumane. It has nothing to do also with religion. That's the religion of George Bush, to hold people accountable according to intentions. Do you have evidence that this new situation in Yemen threatens Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries? First of all, there's no evidence. Second, everybody knows that the problems of Yemen, the internal problems, are very big problems. The security problems because of ISIL and Al-Qaeda. The problems between different groups, the problems between different provinces, the growth, the economy, social issues, financial issues, political, rebuilding leadership, putting together a new constitution, restoring order. The Yemeni people and the factions have work to do from now until 20 years. They have 20 years of work until they finish. And the Yemeni military capabilities are also clear. And those, the side which knows the most the military capabilities of Yemen is Saudi Arabia. Did Yemen take any step which shows that they threaten, that Yemen threatens the security of Saudi Arabia or the security of the Gulf? And I even add even more than this, and I know, I don't know if it was raised in the media, but what I know is that the brothers in Ansar Allah have contacts, or they did have contacts with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and with Qatar and with the Gulf countries, and there were contacts and there were negotiations. And on the eve of the death of King Abdullah bin Abdul Aziz, a delegation from Ansar Allah was in Riyadh, and they sat down with the Saudi intelligence and they were discussing with each other. The king died, a new leadership was formed, the contacts were cut off. Some said that we are ready to hold a political dialogue. They went to the political dialogue in Sana'a. They did not accept to go to Aden. You said Riyadh, they accepted to go to Muscat. Why not in Muscat? If there is any group whose priority is Yemen and they don't want anything, they are ready to hold contacts and to enter political dialogue about the future of Yemen in Muscat or a non-aligned country. And if they haven't attacked you and they haven't took any steps against you, they never declared war against you, they always address you in a friendly way and said what is taking place in Yemen, the threat posed by ISIL and Al-Qaeda targets the brothers in Saudi Arabia just like it targets the Yemeni people. What was the response? What did they do, the Yemenis, in order for you to declare war and say that they threaten the security of Saudi Arabia and the Gulf and Bab al-Mandeb and the security of the Red Sea, etc.? Also, this justification is a false justification and it's a lie and it's completely baseless. I really hope that people will listen to me and let them put their hatred aside, their hatred regarding their own province, their sectarian feelings, so that they can understand. I am giving a scenario. Discuss with us. I'm giving facts. Facts which have been declared and some which have not been announced. When you want to support a war, when anyone agrees or agrees to such a war and has no problem with such a war, he's a partner in this war. Every Muslim who's looking for being innocent, he must take a look. He can't say, okay, Saudi Arabia took a decision, so all Muslims must go behind and follow Saudi Arabia's lead. This war against who is it? If it were against Israel, we were ready to be soldiers in this war. But if it's war against a Muslim people, no. Everybody must sit down and think before they say any word which they could be held accountable for on Judgment Day. In this life, maybe nobody will be held accountable. The third justification, which is most important, which is also false, logically speaking, and then I'll tell you the real reason behind this war. The third justification, which is most mentioned in the Saudi media and the Arab media and all of the Saudi finance media and the media financed by Saudi Arabia's allies, this justification is, why are you going to war against Yemen? The justification is that Yemen is now under Iranian occupation, Iranian hegemony over Yemen, Iranian intervention in Yemen. Okay, Yemen has become Iran and Yemen is Arab and we must retake Yemen. It's part of the Arabian Peninsula. But never did they accept Yemen being part of a GCC because they consider it as a second great country, poor people as a burden. But they said we must retake it from Iranian occupation and Iranian hegemony and Iranian domination. And this is one of the biggest lies which is being spread and circled around by this very brutal media attack, which is stronger than the military attack. Also, let's speak in a calm way. Let's speak calmly here. And from this point, I will further expand and take a look at the region, and then I'll go back to Yemen at the end of the speech. Now, where is the evidence? Where is the evidence that Yemen is under Iranian occupation? Occupation has existence, but one of the most important forms of occupation is the presence of an Iranian army that occupies Yemen. Iranian military bases, for example, that exist in a country, then we accuse Iran of occupying a country. Is there an Iranian army in Yemen? Are there Iranian military bases in Yemen? Is Iran really occupying Yemen militarily? This is one of the most clearest lies, which doesn't require any debate. Now, then they say, no, it's not occupation, militarily speaking, there is Iranian hegemony, Iranian domination over Yemen. Okay, that point is worthy of debate, not just for the sake of Yemen, but in order to understand what is taking place in the region. Allow me here to raise a fundamental problem in the mindset of the Saudi regime and those who are with them. There's a problem in their mindset. This problem is they don't recognize something called peoples. Tunisian people, Egyptian people, Yemeni people, even Gulf people, even Saudi people, Iraqi people. No, that doesn't exist. And popular movements and popular will, popular causes. And for this reason, because they're kings and because they're rulers and because they are capable, between brackets, they look at all people as if they work at their service. And therefore, these people can't have an independent cause or an independent identity. And if at any day these people rise up, they are part of the opposing camp and they are considered to be part of the international conflict. That's a fundamental problem. For this reason, they dealt with the Tunisian issue in such a manner, and they dealt with the Egyptian issue in such a manner. From the beginning, they had dealt with Yemen in that way, and with Iraq and Syria, Bahrain. Such understanding, such a mindset, where does it lead? It leads to wrong stances, wrong policies, and wrong results, and consecutive failures. Meaning, if we take a look, if we go back 20 years, let's take a look at the Saudi foreign policy. I don't want to talk about the internal policy and the Saudi diplomacy. Mention to me success, achievements, consecutive failures. Why? The failures are a result of wrong policies. The wrong policies are a result of a misreading. The misreading is a result of a mindset which thinks in a wrong way or has wrong convictions. Anyway, these policies, this wrong path is what leads, and let me here be clear, it what leads the region to become open to Iran. Even if Iran doesn't exert strong efforts, and here I'll give you some evidence, you are pushing the people. You are dragging them to such a position. The problem is with you, not with Iran. Your failure, your mindset, your means, your plans, your understandings. So I will give a few examples, because from these examples we want to analyze the region. From Lebanon, let's begin with Lebanon. In 1982, I want to focus again on the former language. In 1982, when Israel occupied large areas in Lebanon and entered into Beirut, all the Arabs abandoned Lebanon except Syria. Now, some Arab countries had a political stance. We thank them. Algeria, Sudan, according to what I remember, some countries. But generally speaking, the Arabs who have money, who have influence, and who buy with hundreds of billions of dollars weapons and artillery and warplanes, abandon Lebanon. And the Lebanese had the right to fight Israeli occupation, and they looked for anyone who would support them and stand with them and be with them. And there was Syria and Iran. Iran came from very far away, and there was a war which was imposed on Iran. You have a role where you two played in this war imposed on Iran, but Iran didn't say that Iraq is fighting me, Saddam Hussein's regime is fighting me with Arab support and Gulf support, and let the Lebanese solve their own problems. No. Iran answered our call, and it came and it helped the Lebanese, and it gave them expertise and gave them money and weapons and the technical capabilities, etc., etc. But the resistance in Lebanon was Lebanese. Its men, its women, its leaders, its martyrs, its prisoners, its heroes, its wounded, its orphans, the families of its martyrs, its cause, its movement, its decision was Lebanese 100%. It was not an Iranian resistance, but because you don't recognize a people who are called Lebanon, a Lebanese people, and the Lebanese resistance, a Lebanese movement, and the Lebanese will, you describe this resistance from the very beginning until today as an Iranian resistance, or a resistance which is part of Iran, but it's not as such. And you have no evidence that it is as such. And I have 1,000 pieces of evidence that it is completely Lebanese. But you assume that the resistance in Lebanon is Iranian, not Lebanese and not Arab. Even when we came to give this victory to the Arabs, you didn't accept, you refused, and you behaved in a way you considered an Iranian victory. We wanted this victory to be for all Arabs and all Muslims and all honorable people of the world. This is one example. One example. So Iran is respected in Lebanon amongst a very large segment, and it also has its influence. Yes, that's true. But does Iran occupy Lebanon? No. Does Iran dominate Lebanon? No. Does Iran impose its decisions on Lebanon? No, not at all. And I'll return to this point later on. That is regarding Lebanon. Now, regarding Palestine, you, the Arab governments, and specifically the Saudi regime and the Gulf countries, you abandoned the Palestinian people, as I said before, and you betrayed the people and you left them for Israel to kill and slaughter and displace and violate and imprison and detain. And you left them for America, so that America could put together a political solution via negotiations which won't lead to any solution in any way whatsoever. You didn't do anything for the Palestinian people. Don't wage war on behalf of the Palestinians, but don't you have money? Hundreds of millions of dollars you have. Why are the Palestinians living in such bitterness in the camps throughout the world? Why haven't the Palestinians been able to rebuild what was destroyed in the war on Gaza, not just the last war? Why are the inhabitants of Al-Quds forced to leave, and the inhabitants of the West Bank forced to leave as well? Why? You have money. We don't want you to fight, nor do we want your officers or your generals or your soldiers or your warplanes, nor your storm operation against Israel. But this money which you spend in Europe and America, and the whole world knows where you spend this money, have some sympathy with the Palestinians. But you didn't have such sympathy. You didn't leave them only to confront occupation. You left them to poverty. You left them to be humiliated and displaced. So this Palestinian people called out for help from Iran. And although Iran was subject to a war was imposed on it also from you, a war for 8 years, and after that sanctions and a siege were imposed also because of you. Regardless of that, Iran helped the Palestinians, and it provided what it could to the Palestinians: money, weapons, assistance, and also transferring expertise, training, and technical capabilities. And regarding the political stance, there was a very high, clear, decisive stance. So why shouldn't the Palestinian people sympathize with Iran? Because Iran sympathized with the Palestinians and helped them despite all of Iran's problems. So then you say the Iranian influence in Palestine, the Palestinian cause has become an Iranian issue. We must exert efforts to retake the Palestinian cause so it becomes a Palestinian issue. But who took it away from you? who competed with you regarding the Palestinian cause? Who fought with you? You left the Palestinian cause, you betrayed it, and you insulted it, and Iran came, and of course Syria always had a political, material stance, an honorable stance regarding the Palestinian issue. But I'm speaking about Iran, because Syria isn't accused when it comes to Yemen. So when we speak about retaking the Palestinian issue, they describe it as an Iranian issue. But Iran does not dominate the Palestinians, doesn't control their decision, it doesn't control their movements or their leaders in any way whatsoever. And I will go back to this in one conclusion where I'll connect all these points. Now, regarding Iraq, you say Iranian influence in Iraq, Iranian hegemony, occupation. First of all, there's no occupation. Second, the influence and the impact and the presence. But Iraq, my dear friend, Iraq, let's say what you did in Iraq, Saudi Arabia and those who are with it. First of all, of course, Saddam Hussein had all the motives to launch an aggression against Iran, but you encouraged him and you financed him, according to the confessions of Prince Nayef to one of the Iranian officials face to face. He said, we gave Saddam Hussein $200 billion, and if we were able, if we had been able, we would have given him more. At that time, this $200 billion was a lot. You know the oil prices, $200 billion only from Saudi Arabia. And you incited him to launch war, and he went to war. Iran was destroyed, Iraq was destroyed, and the two countries and the two peoples are still suffering from the repercussions of this unjust war, which is of your blessings, you, the Saudi regime. Then you encouraged and you incited and you helped and you supported George Bush in order to occupy Iraq. The American army came and occupied Iraq, and you were part of this operation, this military and security and logistical and political operation, by facilitating. You didn't fight, you didn't have any military personnel who were fighting, and they didn't want you to provide any soldiers. The Americans came and occupied Iraq. Now, when it seemed that the Iraqi people would not surrender to the American occupation and that they were taking advantage of the opportunity to get rid of Saddam Hussein in order to retrieve their decisions and their status, and when it seemed that they would confront the occupation politically or by resistance, then you unleashed all of the Al-Qaeda groups and the Takfiri groups. And I know, and the Iraqis know, and some of them said this on the media, and I always demanded, and I still call today, I call on the Iraqis to have the courage to show the truth to the Iraqi people and all the Arab people and the people of the world, that he who was sending suicide bombers to Iraq and was managing the sending of car bombs to Iraq, and he who was financing the killing operations in Baghdad and the Iraqi cities in the north and south and in the central parts of Iraq, no difference between Kurds and Turkmens and Sunnis and Shia and Christians, he who did this was the Saudi intelligence. And you committed these acts against the Iraqi people. Your last crime against the Iraqi people was ISIL. You and your allies brought about ISIL. You brought about ISIL from all over the world so that you can topple the regime of Bashar al-Assad and the government of Maliki. Is this something hidden? Everyone knows it. I don't want to say a certain government. I say that your enmity in Iraq was with one certain person. Okay, but in the end, you brought ISIL to them, and your intelligence, your Bandar, he is the one who financed ISIL and brought about ISIL and armed ISIL. Then it backfired. Then ISIL terrorized you. ISIL, which came out of your control, just like Al-Qaeda came out of your control previously. What did the Iraqis get from you? What has it seen from the Saudi regime? For decades, when Saddam Hussein was slaughtering the Iraqi people, when he was committing massacres against the Iraqi people, when he was committing genocide against the people of the north and south and launching aggressions of the people against the people in central Iraq, weren't you helping? Weren't you with Saddam Hussein. This oppressed Iraqi people from the beginning of the American occupation. The Iraqi people saw that there was a side standing with him. Iran was standing with the Iraqi people politically, the international stance, the regional stance, and even resistance-wise. And this was Iranian courage. Unprecedented Iranian courage, because it was supporting a resistance in Iraq against the American army, not supporting resistance in Lebanon and Palestine against the Israeli military. And the Americans threatened. They threatened to bomb Iran, and they threatened to bomb the Al-Quds force, which has become very famous, and they threatened to bomb its bases, and they knew where the Iraqi resistance fighters were training in Iran. And finally, when ISIL attacked, and when all the provinces collapsed in front of ISIL, and Baghdad and Erbil almost collapsed, and when the south almost collapsed, and when they were heading and they almost reached the borders of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, who was the first to take the initiative to help the Iraqi people and sent the money and arms and ammunition and experts and didn't wait for anyone in the world? There was no difference. Just as they supported the Shia in the south, they supported the Kurds in the north. They had the same reaction and assistance to all Iraqis, Shia, Kurds, Turkmen, Sunnis. Wasn't it Iran? What did you do? What did you do to defend the Iraqi people against ISIL? What did America do? America, which came later on and put together a coalition and brought about the warplanes, and until now it's clear, the game is clear. So the Iraqi people, why shouldn't they respect Iran and love Iran? And why shouldn't Iran have such influence? Iran, which stood side by side with Iraq and helped Iraq, supported Iraq and defended Iraq in the past few months in a battle which almost ended its existence because of your support for ISIL. But then Al Arabiya and Al Jazeera and the Arab officials speak about Iranian influence in Iraq. But you are people, you are lazy people, you are a failure. You don't carry out your responsibilities towards the Iraqi people. But there is someone who is very active, who carries out responsibility very quick, although the Iranians are usually quite calm. But why shouldn't Iran have such an influence? The same goes for Syria. When you brought about all the beasts of the world, not in order to achieve victory for the Syrian people, but to topple the regime and dominate Syria. I know the details, but now there's no time. Maybe in 1 week or 10 days we can speak. But the real goal was that Syria would become part and parcel, that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is a young president in a certain situation. He wants to rule the country. There's an economic situation. I know the efforts which Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Turkey exerted, and the policy which was resorted to in order to absorb Bashar al-Assad so that Syria would become part of Saudi Arabia or Qatar or Turkey. However, Syria wanted to remain an independent country, which believes in its regional value and its regional influence. So you put together the whole world to fight Syria in order to topple Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and the regime. In order to achieve this, you destroyed Syria and you reject the political solution in Syria. My brother, all the people in Syria, the people of Syria, go ahead, conduct a survey. You will find that there is consensus amongst the Syrian people that they want a political solution. That's enough. And this war will not lead to toppling the government, but will lead only to more destruction. Who is preventing a political solution in Syria? Who is burning? Who is increasing the flames in Syria? The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and its allies, because the aim has not been achieved. So it's natural that Iran will be respected, because Iran came and supported and helped Syria. And there is no Iranian army. The number of Iranians in Syria is very small. I don't know, 20, 25, 30, 40. Take it from me, they don't reach 50. The number doesn't reach 50. It's certainly not more than 50 individuals. But Saud al-Faisal says Syria is occupied by Iran. And what is even more laughable, it's occupied by Hezbollah. Iran's a regional country, but Hezbollah, can Hezbollah occupy Syria? This is the mindset of ignorance that there is a Syrian people, a Syrian army, a Syrian government which has a lot of popular support. They ignore this and they say that he who is fighting in Syria is Iran and Hezbollah. Hezbollah fighting all throughout Syria, from the north to the south, east to west, all the Iranians. What is this? These are lies, fabrications. Let's connect all of these dots and go back to Yemen. Now, what I underscore, we in Hezbollah, since 1982, we have ties with Iran, friendship, very good ties. I don't hide this. I believe that Imam Sayyid Ali Hussein al-Khamenei is the Imam of the Muslims and is the leader of the Muslims, or Wali Amr al-Muslimin. But regardless of this, I say very honestly, and if you want me to swear, I will swear to God, Iran did not issue any dictations against us. Never did it inform us of any decision. Never did it impose any decision. Locally or regionally, we are an independent leadership. We look into matters, we decide. Sometimes we take their advice. But never did they dictate. Never did they say, do this, accept, don't accept. The way Saudi Arabia behaves with its friends in the world. I won't speak about Lebanon. No. And I really wish that the colleagues in Hamas and the Islamic Jihad and the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine, the general leadership, all the Palestinian factions who have a long-standing ties with the Islamic Revolution, with the Islamic Republic, let them go ahead and say, did Iran at any time impose on you a certain stance? Do this, don't do that, fight, don't fight, object, discuss? No. The same goes for Syria. The same goes for Iraq. That is the truth, but you are not capable of recognizing this truth, of understanding this truth. That's strange. Why? Because Iran is not the Persian Empire. Iran is not the country of Shah Muhammad Rida Pahlavi, your ally, your friend, and your master in the past. Because Iran, the Islamic Republic, the country of Islam, the country of Imam Khomeini, the country of the Muslim people, the country of the Mujahid Muslim people, the country where Islam is above every other racial Persian issue, because Iran is as such, you find it strange. How is Iran helping Lebanon, Palestine, Syria, Iraq, and helping in other places? And then it doesn't dictate, and it doesn't make decisions, it doesn't intervene, it doesn't dominate. If you don't want to believe, don't believe, because you are not capable of understanding such a mindset or such a way of thinking. Now, regarding Yemen, in the end, regarding Yemen. In Yemen, I remembered something. One day, in a certain day, a delegation from the Hamas leadership was in Riyadh, and they told me this. We have no problem with it. When Saud al-Faisal requested from them, or when Saud al-Faisal discussed with them the relations with Iran, they said, Iran is providing us with weapons and training and money. Give us what Iran gives us, and we will cut off our ties with Iran. They told me this. It's not shameful. They told me. But if you want to fight Iranian influence in Palestine, Hamas told you. But they didn't provide Hamas with money, weapons, or training, and they won't have the courage to do this. Why? Because it's about Israel. Because it's about America. Because America's involved. And for this reason, I told many of the Palestinian leaders during the atmosphere of the Arab Spring, I said, my dear brothers, my beloved, look everywhere. Go around the whole world. Go to Mars. Go down under the earth. You won't find anyone in this planet who will provide you with weapons, ammunition, and military technology, and who will stand with you. You might find someone who could give you money to build homes or houses, but you won't find anyone who will give you weapons in the whole planet except Iran and Syria. And now they've reached this conclusion. Now in Yemen, What did you do in Yemen? Now, there was a crime which is being committed by a group in Yemen, and you're coming to punish them. But what did you do? The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, what did it do in Yemen? It is dominating, it has been dominating Yemen for decades. It is intervening in every issue in Yemen. In the administration, politics, security, economy, the army, the tribes, even in the religious sects. Didn't you pursue efforts and spend a lot of money to convert certain tribes from one sect to another without naming? Didn't you try and take advantage of all of the contradictions in Yemen in order to maintain your domination and your hegemony over Yemen? What did you do in Yemen after decades of your control? Where is the infrastructure, the economy, the security in Yemen? Where is the stability in Yemen? Didn't you deal with Yemen? You rejected that Yemen would join the GCC. You considered Yemen as a burden. Didn't you deal, as the Yemenis themselves say, you always dealt with the Yemeni people in an arrogant way, in an insulting way. And regarding Ansarullah and the Houthis, as you say, didn't you, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, didn't you support six wars against those oppressed, isolated people in the Saada province to eliminate them and to uproot them, to eradicate them? Didn't you attack them and you were defeated? And after they had a very important say in the country, they came to you and they put the past behind them and they said, let's reach an understanding, let's talk to one another. Didn't you do this in Yemen? What did you give to Yemen and the Yemeni people? Yes, you spent billions of dollars in Yemen, but you spent this money to buy conscience, to change sects and to support takfiri groups and to buy loyalty. This is what you did in Yemen. In the end, after decades, this Yemeni people has reached a stage of vigilance, of will, of determination, that all the people of the region, all the people of a region can't be looked at the same way as before. And the Yemeni people took the decision to retake their country and their borders and their existence and their dignity. Now, on the other hand, I will refer to details because it's a large-scale war now. The Houthi brothers or Ansarullah, name them what you want, they had no ties with Iran. Since 2 years, they had no relations. They had relations with Arab countries, including Qatar. And this is something which Qatari officials said. Even me, I had no contacts with the Houthis, neither Hezbollah, no one. Up until the sixth war, we didn't know them. We sympathized with them on the media. We saw that they were oppressed. But were there any contacts? No. Were there any close acquaintance? No. Iran sympathized with them, it stood by their side, it recognized their right. So for this reason, they like Iran, they respect Iran. But Iran does not intervene in Yemen, nor does it intervene in Yemen's decision making. Today, the Yemenis, they are the ones who will decide, and they decided how to deal with this war. And I will even add, the Islamic Republic of Iran does not dictate, does not intervene, and even if anyone wanted to ask Iran, Iran doesn't respond. And it tells everyone in Yemen, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, this is your decision. That's what it says. There is no hegemony or intervention. Yes, there is respect for Iran and Yemen after all of these decades of catastrophes which the Yemeni people witness because of your performance and your policies. Yes, today you are pushing all of Yemen towards Iran, just like you did with Iraq and Syria and a lot of the Palestinians, a large segment of the Palestinians. Retrieving Yemen does not take place by launching war on Yemen. Retaking Yemen is done by absorbing Yemen, dealing in a brotherly way with the Yemen, holding dialogue with the Yemeni people, dealing wisely with the Yemeni people, not by launching such an operation. By affection, by love, But such a military operation, I'll tell you where it would lead. The real reason, now we're approaching the end, the real reason you Arabs, you Muslims, you the people of the world, and you the Yemenis, and you the Saudi people, and you the Arab people, who some of your governments want your sons, want you to send your sons to fight in Yemen. The reason, the real reason, is that Saudi Arabia failed in Yemen and lost in Yemen and lost hegemony and domination of Yemen, and it has become tired of its own decisions and its groups in Yemen and the Takfiri groups in Yemen, and it sensed that Yemen has become the property of its people, the property of real national, sovereign, independent factions, not subject to the influence of anyone. And Saudi Arabia cannot put up with this. The aim of the war is to retrieve, retake domination and hegemony over Yemen. To retake this domination. Whoever has any objection, let him speak out. And today, what is required, and let me use these words, I say Saudi Arabia, Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, for once I will say, in order for the emirs of Al Saud to retrieve the hegemony of Yemen, what is required is for the blood of the Saudi officers and the blood of the Yemeni army and people to be spilt. Why? Just because this emir or that emir have lost control over Yemen. This is something which I say to Allah, and I say that these words of righteousness will have repercussions, and you all know they will have repercussions, but it must be said. Based upon everything which was mentioned, first of all, we condemn the Saudi American, the unjust Saudi American aggression against Yemen and its people, its army, its installations, its present and its future. Second, we call for a stop from now. We call for a halt to this aggression. Number three, we call for once again resorting to the initiatives in order to reach a political solution in Yemen. Before the aggression and after the aggression, the colleagues in Yemen said that they will agree to dialogue in Muscat or in any non-aligned country. Go ahead. I don't know their decision now, but that's what I hear on the media. And when people go to dialogue and when they reach a result after that, then regional ties can be established and all guarantees can be made which reassure the Gulf countries regarding their status in the new situation. Number four, I call on the peoples of the countries whose governments are participating in the aggression to revise, reevaluate, go back to their conscience and their interests. Do you accept that the blood of your brothers is spilt so that a certain emir can retrieve his domination and hegemony over an oppressed people? This is a question I pose to the Jordanians, the people of the Gulf countries, the Saudi people, the Egyptian people, the Sudani people, the Moroccan people, the Pakistani people. At the very least, these are the names which are being mentioned, the names of the countries. Is this in your interests? Let's forget all the countries. I'm very surprised with the stance of the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, the stance of President Mahmoud Abbas. Is it in the interest of the Palestinian people, Abu Mazen, to support a war against the people, to support an aggression against the country? What kind of logic do you still have? If the Israelis come back and launch an aggression against the West Bank and Gaza, you have no case. You supported a war against the people. That's it. Go and sit in your home. You have no case left. And regarding the other countries, think about your interest, the interest of your people. Is this in your interest just for the sake of Saudi Arabia's money and Saudi Arabia's praise? The whole region goes to war for the sake of something that can be addressed politically and by negotiations directly to war? Number five, it's the right of the Yemeni people. It's the right of the Yemeni people, the oppressed, beloved, honorable, courageous, wise Yemeni people. The Yemeni people of will and determination, it's their right to defend and to resist and confront. And they are doing this, and they will do this. And I will tell you, they will achieve victory. This oppressed resistance, the Yemeni people of resistance will achieve victory, because these are the laws of Allah. This is history. This is part of history. The Saudi army and those who will join the Saudi army, are they stronger than the American army? Where is the American army now in Iraq? Where is it in Afghanistan? Where is it in Lebanon when they came in 1982? Is the Saudi Arabian army stronger than the Israeli army? Where is the Israeli army? In all of the recent battles throughout history, the invaders are defeated. The invaders are humiliated, and Saudi Arabia, the rulers in Saudi Arabia, still have a chance not to be defeated, not to be humiliated, and to reconsider their wrong policies and to behave as brothers with the Yemenis and to go to dialogue. And these doors are all open, and this is the punishment of this battle. From now, it's clear. Don't be happy. Don't rejoice because of some of your air raids in Iraq previously and later in Afghanistan, in Gaza, Lebanon, in July, after July. The whole world now, in all the military schools throughout the world, they know that air raids don't bring about victory. They don't decide a war. Okay, where is the Saudi army? The Saudi army doesn't want to fight. It wants to bring Pakistanis to fight on their behalf. It wants to bring Egyptians to fight on their behalf. It wants to bring Jordanians to fight on their behalf. Here, the peoples have a very big responsibility. They are called upon to express solidarity. They are called upon to prevent their governments from getting involved in spilling the blood of the Yemenis. And they are called upon to stay away from a battle whose fate is clear. The fate, the Saudi Arabian regime, of course, we respect the Saudi Arabian people because they are one of the oppressed people in our ummah. The victory will, of course, be for the Yemeni people, because this is part of history. And anyone who knows the Yemeni people knows that the Yemeni people will not put up with this aggression and will not accept this humiliation and will fight in defense of its dignity, existence, its families, and its territory. However, there is still time. There is still a chance. The Arab countries tomorrow, the Arab League, instead of the Arab heads of state, instead of them becoming partners in spilling the blood of the Yemeni people and destroying Yemen, let them take historic responsibilities, and let there be an Arab initiative or an Islamic initiative or international initiative to end the aggression and to go to a political solution. Otherwise, defeat will be the fate of the invaders. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.